Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
A few weeks ago, Switzerland's population topped the 8 million mark, all residing on 16,000 square miles, half of which is uninhabitable or inhospitable. In 1945, there were just 4.25 million people here, and when, in the 1960s, the economics professor Francesco Knechaurek predicted 10 million by the turn of the century, he was laughed at by many. On present going, Switzerland will reach the 10 million mark by 2030 or thereabouts. That the country is already bursting at the seams right now is plain to see. Traffic jams, overfilled public transport, housing shortage causing escalating prices, more people shooting each other, world-beating consumption of tranquilizers and the like. The post-war economic boom led to mass immigration, with the recruitment of hundreds of thousands of mainly Italians, Yugoslavs, Portuguese and Spaniards. And Switzerland adopting the EU's free movement of persons policy has now cemented the situation. Immigration, largely from the EU, is running at over 1% per annum. A medium-sized city of 80 to 90,000 persons is newly created every year, a population growth higher than the European average. In a recent report, the Swiss government says the free movement of persons has been beneficial by and large, especially in economic terms. It admits strain on social and welfare matters, education and traffic, but these are obviously regarded as secondary issues. The idea that the point of diminishing returns has already been reached is not discussed. Looking away and burying one's head in the sand is as Swiss as Gruyere cheese. I remember in the mid-90s, the then Interior Minister was asked at a press conference by a prominent journalist what the government thought of population growth in the light of the influx of 300,000 Balkan refugees. Her answer was, "That's not my department." The minister has retired, the journalist has died, and the Balkan refugees have swelled the resident foreign population to 23% of the total, not counting some 300,000 illegal immigrants and 100,000 persons with some kind of asylum application in the works. There are no easy answers to this problem, so the government prefers to divert attention by trying to re-educate the populace. Car sales are booming also thanks to the new immigrants, so for ecological reasons the government wants to raise fuel prices to 5 francs a litre. The added population needs electricity, wastewater, gas and oil utilities, so the government wants to pull right out of nuclear energy and replace it with solar, wind parks and more hydroelectric power. All these energy alternatives would need massive state support, but local, regional and lobby members could torpedo any development at every juncture. Meanwhile, the much-vaunted federal railways have found a solution for overcrowded trains. New first-class carriages will have 4 seats across the width instead of today's comfortable 3. Reminds me of when the Boeing 747 Jumbo was introduced in 1969. It had 8 seats across in economy. Then it grew to 10. Perhaps there are some with 11 now. At the same time, everybody is getting broader in the beam. This is just a minor example of the fact that when you push people too hard, there is a risk of violence on the streets, as seen in Madrid and London. The euro crisis is pushing folk in certain EU countries too far. The Swiss can perhaps take consolation from a journalist of the London Daily Telegraph who observed that the mob is also not what it used to be. Peter Haller for Switzerland in Sound.
You can now hear programs from PCJ Radio while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. It's free and just takes a few seconds. Then during registration, hit the promo code box and enter PCJ to get automatically entered to win $100. For more information, go to www.pcjmedia.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the right menu. PCJ Radio on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio.
There are many visitors, obviously, who come to Switzerland. This is a very popular destination for visitors from all over the world. Many, many ways to see this country. And, of course, the classic way would be by train or by boat. Switzerland has probably Europe's best organized public transport system. But, you know, there's another way to see Switzerland, and that is from the bird's eye view. No, I don't mean in a commercial airliner flying over the country. I mean getting into a small plane or a helicopter or how about a hot air or even gas balloon, doing it that way. We have the man with all the answers how we best do that. He is Felix Kieser, who is the Secretary General of the Aero Club of Switzerland. If he doesn't know about this, then nobody does. Mr. Kieser, welcome to Switzerland in Sound. First of all, quite a basic question here. We assume that it's fairly easy to see Switzerland by small plane, helicopter, or balloon. Is that in fact the case? Is it easy to do?
Yes, affirm, as the pilots would say. We have got quite a few airfields in Switzerland, more than 40 small fields, and whether it be within the Alps or further down, we have a lot of occasions to do that.
This, of course, from a pilot's point of view, is a really, it's a challenging country with all of the mountains. We have special weather patterns here, microclimates. These pilots must be pretty good. They're pretty well trained. We're not talking about the old barnstorming pilots of years ago. These guys know what they're doing.
Yes, and we have just to demonstrate what it means. We have special ALP instruction lessons that all pilots that fly in Switzerland have to undergo. And the foreign pilots who come to Switzerland, they do first get instructions how to fly within the Alps and into the Alps in case they do not perform that in their own country.
So anyone who will take a small plane ride or a helicopter ride or a balloon, they can rest assured they're in the best possible hands.
I can assure you, yes, we are very regulated. That is certainly the case.
And of course, here in Switzerland, we have to remember that there's a militia army or air force. There's a semi-professional air force in this country. I imagine some of your membership and some of these pilots probably also are military pilots at the same time. They know the mountains. They know the terrain very well.
Exactly. That's quite the case. A lot of them come from the military, are still in the military. All the basic training was in the military.
They don't get any better. I've seen some of these guys in action. It's amazing. Also on the internet, you can see some breathtaking videos of Swiss Air Force pilots and what they do. It's absolutely incredible, and anyone interested can find that. Mr. Kieser, let's look at the flights themselves. I mean, Switzerland is a small country, but extremely diverse. If we look at the geography, can you say which are the most popular flights among visitors to this country?
Of course, to the Alps or within the Alps, but of the other places, very nice to see. But most popular, to answer your question, yes, these are the Alps. And within the Alps, it's probably the Matterhorn, the old Matterhorn, though there are many other places that are spectacular at the Matterhorn.
I can imagine around Lucerne, it would be the Pilatus, and in the Bernese Oberland, it would be the Jungfrau, and so on, that kind of thing.
Exactly. And the advantage is if you come out from here, then you all your way along to the Matterhorn. Well, if we stay with the Matterhorn, then you have a spectacular scenery all the way up there.
Is it possible, incidentally, to do mountain hopping trips, for example, to go over the mountains to neighboring Italy or perhaps to Germany or France? Is that also done?
Certainly. And one popular route is coming from here, the countryside, going to the Alps and then take a break in Sion, for example, or Geneva, and then go back. Meaning taking a break, landing at an airport there and having what we used to call the $100 hamburger in the States to go back.
A very good friend of mine was a glider pilot here in Switzerland. He did also motor gliders, and I had some wonderful times with him. It's so breathtaking, and we mustn't forget that in addition to the classic small motorized planes, also gliders are fit into this. So we talk about small motor aircraft, light aircraft, in other words. We talk about gliders, helicopters, balloons. This is quite an assortment of hardware here. Can you say, Mr. Kieser, which type of aircraft is best suited for which type of sightseeing?
Well, I would just start with a very good idea. You've just mentioned that the sailplane, it's just that it's only for one person that can do it. So you cannot go together with your friends, but you have the pilot and yourself. That is really something special to glide among the mountains, as you just pointed out. Then, of course, there are the other means, the other aircrafts and balloons, the small ones, the bigger ones. From the small one, that is probably the most popular, the Piper and the Cessnas and so on. But you have the small helicopters also that are more affordable than the big ones. And then you have the balloon, the hot air or even gas, which has become rare. But that is something very spectacular to do and really amazing, the balloon rides.
Well, the balloon, of course, that must be the great classic way. I mean, we go back to the grand days of the grand tour, seeing the mountains by balloon. You bring your champagne along and you sit and just look at God's country. You need some time for a balloon trip, don't you?
Exactly. You need the weather, pilot, and time. And then if you talk about the old times, we have to mention the gas balloon, which has, as I said, become very rare, but also very expensive, we have to be honest.
Let's look at the cost for a moment. Does one have to see his banker first before you go on one of these trips, or is it affordable?
No, I think it's sufficient to consult your family and take it along. So we are talking from, I would say, 100 francs up, of course. If you have 100 francs for a helicopter, that will be a short jump you do. But with the four-seater small airplane with 100 francs, you do already a 30-minute trip. Mm-hmm. But I would say from 150 francs on, you have a beautiful sight. And as far as ballooning is concerned, I would add up that to 200. But the average is for the motor aircraft. For a sightseeing into the Alps, I would say 250 or 200 to 250, about an average. With a helicopter, it adds that up to, or goes up to 350, and the balloon also around that.
Now, are these half-hour segments we're talking about or full hour?
The average one I was mentioning now, I counted an hour. That, mm-hmm. I think, is an average of a sightseeing flight.
Well, that's a pretty fair
flight.
Ride
the balloon, yes.
Yeah, that's a good flight. Incidentally, before I forget, years and years ago, as a young reporter for the International Radio, I got an interesting assignment. You will know the name T. Rufer, one of Switzerland's most famous glacier pilots. I think he used to have a Piper Cub or something along
those
lines.
Most probably, yes.
Yeah, and he would actually land and take off on glaciers. Is this still done?
Yes.
You can still do that?
Of course, yes. And that is really amazing to do that, yes.
Yeah.
There are not so many glacier pilots. They demand a lot of experience. There's lot of experience, and there are not so many glaciers again who we are allowed to land on. Mm. But that is something really special.
And that's a very high specialty too. I mean, you really have to know what you're doing.
Exactly, and it's still done. Yes,
yeah.
But it needs a lot of loadage and another skill.
It's getting exciting. I'd like to get one of these flights myself again. I have one last question for you, Mr. Kieser. What about private pilots who are licensed in their home countries? And they say, well, you know, that would be a great idea, but I can fly my own plane. Can they do that here?
Yes. Most pilots fly internationally, fly in other countries, so they are allowed to do that. And the international regulation has been valid for since the beginning of flying almost. There have been agreements. So that means that we can fly into and out of other countries with foreign licenses, most of the pilots. Of course, there are also licenses that only apply for the home country. Then what I would recommend to foreign pilots, if they want to do it commercially and add and make really make it attractive and go to public and announce themselves, then I would recommend they check the validity of their license and their activity with FOCA, our national regulator.
You mean if a commercial pilot wants to work as a commercial pilot here, this requires a special agreement. But an ordinary sport or private pilot, as we understand it, the classic Cessna or Tri-Pacer or Piper Flyer or Mooney, he can come here with his national license and it will be recognized.
Of course, yes.
Sounds very exciting. I used to fly a lot with my father. Back where I grew up, and I understand you were there too, I grew up in New Jersey, outside New York, and you lived in Long Island on the other
side. Exactly, that's where I got my first flying lessons, and my license, by the way.
Isn't that something? It really is a small world. We used to fly out of sometimes Teterboro.
Teterboro.
When it was still a very small, quiet airport. Now it's very commercial. And then Morristown. You probably know Morristown.
Yes, of course. When you mention it now, I remember that it was part of my lessons, of my landings. Yes.
Those were the days when you actually were allowed to fly right over Manhattan. I think that's not done anymore.
I still could do that. Yes, I still could do that.
Yeah, but
flying out of Long Island. Yes.
I think, though, you need permission and clearance before you can do that these days.
It's, of course you have. Of course, and radio communication is part of the flying.
That's right. That's right. Felix Kieser, the Secretary General of the Aero Club of Switzerland, with some expert, well-informed information for those who would like to see Switzerland from up there. On your next visit, some great ideas. We'll also have a few links for you here on the website. Mr. Kieser, thank you very much, and of course I have to wish you happy landings.
Okay, I thank you very much, and wish everybody flights over and into Switzerland.
Unforgettable it will be. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay.
For Switzerland in Sound, this is Bob Zanotti. A week ago, it was nearly 30 degrees Celsius and clear and sunny. It seemed that summer had finally arrived after the mostly cool and rainy months hitherto. But as I write this in the early morning a week later, it's a mere 12 degrees outside. It looks like another gloomy day of rain with the heating on. Such is the weather pattern in this part of the world. But let's return to last week, when my oldest daughter turned 40, and my wife and I celebrated our 42nd wedding anniversary on the same day. Prior to this, my daughter had mentioned in passing how she'd love to have some fresh ravioli again from a particular shop in Domodossola, the main town near the Italian side of the Simplon Pass. Domo, as we call it, is practically an honorary part of Switzerland because it's so popular with Swiss day trippers who go down for a quick dose of Italianità and a little shopping. Okay, I thought, ravioli from Domo will be my birthday present to my daughter. Normally I go to Domo by train or by car, but for a long time now I'd wanted to do the trip by motor scooter. The weather was perfect, so I set off in the mid-afternoon and arrived in Domo in the early evening. The 150-kilometer trip from the Emmental over the Simplon Pass went just fine. At Kandersteg in the Bernese Oberland, I drove the scooter onto the rail conveyance through the Lutschberg Tunnel. After 12 minutes, we emerged at Goppenstein on the Canton Valley side. From there, it was normal roads all the way to Domodossola via the Simplon. The pass itself at 2,005 meters was chilly, but otherwise pleasant and uneventful. At this time of the year, there was also very little traffic. Interestingly, the trip by motor scooter took only half an hour longer than by car, due to the limited speeds that can be done through Canton Valley and over the Simplon Pass. The fuel economy was sensational and hardly figured in the overall cost of the trip. Driving around Domo on a motor scooter was a joy that I had never experienced before, at least not there. I felt like I was part of a 1950s or 60s Italian movie. That evening, I had a drink at the old piazza and then went to an out-of-the-way trattoria I found with the scooter, and indulged in an hour-and-a-half solo dinner. The next morning I drove to the pasticceria I knew in town and bought 2 kilos of ricotta and spinach ravioli that had just been made. I told the owner my story of the motor scooter trip from Switzerland to buy his ravioli, and he was so thrilled and impressed to hear this that he scooped up half a kilo of gemelli and gave it to me as a present to take home as well. Meanwhile, back in the Emmental, yesterday morning my grandson, who spent the night here, came downstairs early for breakfast. We decided that it would be a great idea to go for a motor scooter ride through the hinterlands of this area of the Emmental. We literally almost got lost and had a great time finding our way through all the little roads through the dense woods around here. It was a real discovery experience. Despite having lived here for 35 years, there were still new things to discover. Along the way, we observed deer running across the lonely roads and saw other wildlife. We passed a stern-looking but surely friendly farmer sitting on a bench, puffing on his Sunday pipe. We stopped at a wayside bench and had a long chat together and gazed out onto the rolling hills of the Emmental. We stopped for a walk and came across a group of German motorcyclists who were doing the same thing. A brief international encounter in the midst of the deep Emmental. On the bottom line, touring Switzerland by bicycle, motor scooter, or motorcycle is a great adventure. It can also be inexpensive because you can buy provisions at normal stores and supermarkets along the way and enjoy a snack or a picnic in the open air. Many people even camp out in a small tent and sleeping bag, which usually costs nothing. But there are also reasonably priced accommodations available, especially in the rural areas, if you prefer more comfort, not to mention contact with the local people. I'm the first to criticize the excessively high costs of conventional Swiss tourism infrastructure, but I'm also the first to point out that you can still see this country on the cheap and maybe even have a more genuine Swiss experience in the process. Well, the forecast is for a gradual return to warmer and sunnier weather this week. Let's hope they're right. In the meantime, the motor scooter is ready to go at the first opportunity.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.